This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. A lucid dream is a dream in which the sleeper is aware that she or he is dreaming. Lucid dreams can seem extremely real and vivid, depending on a person's level of self-awareness during the dream. The term was coined by the Dutch psychiatrist and writer Frederik van Eeden. Today, we talk again with our lucid dream expert, Iowan Robert Wagner, president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. We'll focus this hour on dreams that apparently contain telepathic information. Throughout history, individuals have reported dreaming of events like the death of a loved one far away or the birth of a child, but later learned that the information was valid. Does dream telepathy exist? Have you experienced a telepathic dream? We'll take part in our conversation with Robert Wagner in 5 minutes on Talk of Iowa, following news from Iowa Public Radio and National Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese, and it's our Lucid Dream Day on the program with Robert Wagner, president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And Robert Wagner is in our AIM studio. Good morning, Robert.
Hi, Dennis.
You note that dreams that apparently contain telepathic information are one of the most commonly reported types of paranormal dreams. How often are dreams telepathic?
Boy, that's a hard one to know exactly. I think what they've discovered is that 2 out of 3 people feel that they've had a telepathic dream. And so they're, for many people, they're very, very rare. But when you look at the population as a whole, about 2 out of 3 people feel that they've gotten unknown information in the dream state.
Well, this has been talked about for decades by going back to the 19th century. Telepathic dreams have been reported. And you note a typical dream would be dreaming about the death of a loved one far away or the birth of a child, and then the information turns out to be valid. Has any of this been confirmed by scientists as being more than just possibilities?
Right. You know, I don't know if confirmed is the right word. There have certainly been studies that have been very suggestive that dream telepathy occurs. We also have people like Carl Jung, the famous dream theorist and psychiatrist. He wrote back in the 1950s that another dream determinant that deserves mention is telepathy. The authenticity of this phenomenon can no longer be disputed today. It is, of course, very simple to deny its existence without examining the evidence, but that is an unscientific procedure which is unworthy of notice. He goes on to say, I have found by experience that telepathy does, in fact, influence dreams, as has been asserted since ancient times. Certain people are particularly sensitive in this respect and often have telepathically influenced dreams. Also, when you read the literature, you'll find that Sigmund Freud had done experiments with a friend of his, a Hungarian, Sandor Ferenczi. And in those experiments, Freud stated that he had always held a favorable prejudice in favor of telepathy. But he didn't pursue it because he couldn't figure out a mechanism to explain it. And also, he didn't want to draw away attention from his main idea that was in psychoanalysis. So people have been talking about this for centuries, probably for millennia. But in the 1960s, of course, we started having experiments that were scientifically done on it.
So these don't happen very often. Has this ever happened to you, Robert?
Sure. Because I'm a person who pays attention to my dreams, I keep a dream journal. It's something I've been doing off and on for 30 years. Frequently, I'll have dreams that seem quite strange, or I'll dream about someone who I haven't seen in quite a long while. Recently, I had one about 6 months ago in which I dreamt of a friend of mine who is a professor over at a Big 12 school. And what was odd in the dream, his hand and wrist were totally red, but at the same time, he was very happy, and it was his right hand and wrist. And so I asked my wife to give him a call and ask him what was going on with his right hand and wrist, or if anything was going on with his right hand and wrist. And as soon as she called, he started laughing, and he said that we hadn't seen him in a year's time, but he had developed carpal tunnel syndrome in his right hand and wrist, and he was planning to have surgery And he was looking forward to the surgery because he was hoping the doctor would let him stay consciously aware so he could watch the surgery happen at the same time. So when you have an instance like that, you realize that that it appears that some sort of information I had received about a condition that a friend of ours had who we hadn't talked to in a year's time. So when you have that kind of thing as a person who pays attention to dreams, it starts to be very, very common.
Well, at least he wasn't a serious medical condition, and he did well after the surgery. But there are other telepathic dreams that fall into categories like crisis dreams about the passing of a relative or a friend, or then on the other side of the coin, you've got, you know, so-called celebration dreams, dreams of good fortune. Which are more common?
You know, I think what people remember are the ones that have more emotional significance to them. I was looking through some of the books I have in my library, and there's one that was written by a professor, David Ryback, and the book is called Dreams That Come True. And in there, he has what he calls a shared simultaneous dream that he received from a woman in Baltic, South Dakota. And I just want to read what happened so people kind of see what a telepathic dream might be. So the woman writes, "When my eldest brother was in the service during World War II, I dreamt that another brother and I stood beside a hospital bed in Europe. My eldest brother lay there. His leg and back had been hurt. I wrote to my mother to tell her of my dream. I received a letter back from my mother in waking reality that she had had the same dream and that she had been there beside my brother's bed in that dream that same night." The woman goes on to say that when my brother came home from the service, we were all home. When he got out of the car and walked up the sidewalk, he was limping. He had been in a Jeep accident and injured his back and leg. He had never written my mother during the several weeks he was in the hospital because he thought she would be upset. So here we have a case of people who are separated by thousands of miles. They, two women on the same night, dream about the son and brother. And they also identify correctly the parts of his body that are injured. And I'm sure that many of our listeners have similar types of dreams. But that's an example of what appears to be a telepathic dream. And there's many, many anecdotes just like that.
We'd like to hear from our listeners who have had telepathic dreams or just have questions about telepathic dreams or dreams in general. Because we have Robert Wagner this hour, president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And Robert, you live in Des Moines.
Actually, I live in Ames.
You live in Ames. Okay. Yeah. And we will take calls at 866-780-9100. Again, 866-780-9100. Or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org is our email. Any idea, this is the $64,000 question, I guess, how this information is transmitted? I mean, we don't have any idea, right?
You know, it's one of these things that sometimes theoretical physicists get involved in. You have people like David Bohm, who was a colleague of Einstein's. And oftentimes they'll talk about the implicate order and the explicate order, and that on a larger level, everything from a theoretical physics perspective seems to be connected. So sometimes people will just refer to that it appears that things are connected. Other times people take kind of a more religious or spiritual viewpoint of kind of seeing a connection in that sense. But you're right, it hasn't been studied as much as we'd hope, and so we really don't have an exact mechanism other than to say that it appears to exist, and there's some studies that certainly suggest that it does.
This is it sort of like it's synchronicity that Jung talked about, wasn't it?
Right.
Something similar to that, maybe?
To some degree, yes. Jung coined the term synchronicity to talk about events that occurred that seemed to have no causal relationship. And so one of his examples was one time he was there in his office in Switzerland talking to a woman who was one of his clients. And she began to talk about a dream of a scarab beetle from Egypt. All of a sudden, at that exact moment, Jung realized that there was some insect tapping on his window. And it kept tapping on his window as this woman was going on about the dream. And finally, he went to the window, opened it up, and there was a beetle that flew in that in Europe is called the rose scarab. And so those are examples of kind of a synchronicity. But in dreams, it's interesting because oftentimes the information that comes through is quite incredible on occasion and really suggestive of some connection.
Well, believe it or not, Robert, we have lots of callers who want to take part right. In the conversation. Let's start with Jake, who is in Waterloo. Good morning, Jake.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Go ahead. I had a question. What does gestalt dreaming have to do with the multiple people dreaming the same thing, such as what the gentleman said earlier about the two women and the gentleman in service, probably? I'll take my answer off the air.
I'm sorry. I didn't get your question exactly. What did you say there at the beginning?
Okay. What does gestalt dreaming
gestalt?
Have to do?
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, gestalt dreaming. I'm sorry. Gestalt dreaming is a theory that Fritz Perls developed, a German Fritz Perls, and gestalt basically refers to the whole, that the entirety, that in dreaming, the basic idea according to Fritz Perls is we learn to bring back to ourselves or to become more consciously aware of those parts of ourselves that we're missing, and so. So in many respects, that's one theoretical suggestion on why we have dreams is to learn about the parts of ourselves that we're missing or ignoring. So I wouldn't say necessarily that Gestalt or Fritz Perls actually talk that much about dream telepathy.
Okay, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Joe in Iowa City. Good morning, Joe.
Yeah, I've had a very interesting one. One of the things about me is that I've been interested in weather and climate all my life. And I've had three major ones, weather dreams, that have come true. One of them was in the summer of 76, where I dreamed that I'm from Dayton, Ohio, too. So I was reading the paper, and I noticed that the average for this particular day the following winter was minus 16. And on January 17, 1977, the high was minus 10, the low was minus 21, average minus 16 in Dayton. The following year, I dreamt of a hill that was a real long green hill and got brown, and at the very bottom was a lot of snow. And that particular winter, of course, it was very snowy, and in Ohio they had a huge blizzard, but in St. Louis we got 66 inches of snow, which is like three times the normal. The last one that definitely came true was in New Year's Eve of 93, which had been a normal December that year in Iowa City. And I dreamt about Craig Johnson, who was the meteorologist at the time in Channel 7 here.
Mm-hmm.
And on the map, there was this huge reddish-purple blob coming out from Canada.
Hey, Joe, can you hold a thought for just a minute? We have to take a quick break. We'll get back to your weather dreams here in a minute as Talk of Iowa continues with Robert Wagner, president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. It's our Lucid Dream Hour with Robert Wagner, president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. Robert lives in Ames, and we were hearing from Joe, who's calling from Iowa City, about some very interesting weather dreams. And Joe, I think you were just about to wrap up that last one.
Yeah, the last one was this huge blob of, you know, pink, purple. You know, like they have the graphics on the Weather Channel. And 2 weeks later, the high was minus 15, the low was minus 24 in Iowa City. And that particular month was extremely cold. The last one that has not come yet, and of course, usually they happen within, you know, 2 weeks to 6 months. Now, this one I think was about 2 years ago. Or I dreamed in May or June, we still had snow patches, and I hope that one does not come true. So anyway, I've never got anything on the stock market, nothing useful, but those are what I know for sure have come true.
Yeah, thanks very much, Joe. You know, sometimes when people look at dreams like this, just like this Professor David Ryback, who wrote Dreams That Come True, he asked his class, of which two-thirds of the class said that they felt like they'd had a paranormal dream, to provide an example. And he started going through the examples and basically realized that of the examples, there was basically almost 9% that he could not explain away. So it might be the case in Joe's case, if a person wanted to be a devil's advocate here, to say that on a deeper level, Joe just realizes weather patterns at a deep unconscious level. And based on that, he has dreams that are suggestive of future weather patterns. But then again, even Craig Johnson or any meteorologist out there would give a probability of the likelihood of the event happening, the meteorological event. And sometimes I think that's the same thing that people ought to do in terms of predictive or precognitive dreams, is think about them in probabilistic terms.
I was just curious about your dream journal you're talking about earlier, Robert. Is this a journal that you keep the very second that you wake up, you grab a piece of paper and write these down before they drift off? And
you know, basically what I do when I wake up at night, the first dream, I'll just jot some notes in the upper left-hand corner of my dream journal. The second dream of the night that I recall, I'll put a couple notes in the bottom left-hand corner, and I'll just go around my dream journal like that. But it's one of those things, if you are interested in the subject, you can get quite good at remembering your dreams.
Let's go next to Kevin in Davis City, who has, I think, some telepathic dreams to discuss. Hello, Kevin.
Hi. Mr. Wagner, I've had two different telepathic dreams involving death, and they both were transcontinental, where I was in one continent and death happened in another. I wondered if it's possible that these sorts of dreams happen more often over a long distance. And another question is it possible that in human evolution that this may have happened more frequently in the past? And also, does the age of the person having the, is it more likely to have a telepathic dream at any certain age?
Okay, good. No, those are excellent questions. You know, as you talk, I'm reminded of a of an article that Mark Twain wrote for Harper's Monthly back in December of 1891, I believe. But he wrote an article on mental telegraphy. That's what he called it, like a telegraph, mental telegraphy. And you can find this if you go to the Cornell website. It's called Making of America, Cornell University, Making of America. But in these experiences that Mark Twain had that were basically waking intuitions, he felt that he often received information from people who were going to write him because he had this urge to write them. So it got to the point where he stopped writing people because he knew they were going to write him, and he'd just wait to get the envelope with their information that he'd already intuitively picked up. But to your question, does it happen more over a long distance? I wouldn't know if that's the case necessarily. The nice thing about telepathic dreams that appear to occur over long distances is that then it rules out some of the concerns that scientists have that a person might have gotten some sensory cues. Oftentimes you'll have a dream experience, but on a deeper level, you might actually be hearing the event take place. Like a woman dreamt of an avalanche in her area, and actually that night there had been an avalanche that occurred about 5 miles away. So maybe on some deep level she actually heard it. But when you have these experiences of a long-distance transcontinental kind of dream, that takes out some of those concerns. Does it happen more in the past? You know, I wouldn't know if that's necessarily the case either. Throughout recorded history, people have talked about telepathic dreams. Some Native American cultures actually use dreams as a way of getting information and picking the leader of the tribe and that sort of thing. I'd say it probably still happens as much as what it always did. It's just nowadays it's whether the culture accepts us talking about it. And does the age of the person matter? Probably the only reason the age might matter is we're a little bit more likely to remember dreams in our youth. And sometimes as we age, because of whatever reason, biological or just out of habit, we seem to recall dreams less frequently.
I wonder if you get, as you get more older, you just sort of take dreams for granted. You think, well, I've had that same dream now for 30 years. It's just...
Right. It's one of those things. If you really don't see any value in dreaming, you probably won't remember your dreams.
Hmm.
And that's probably the number one reason people don't remember their dreams.
I see. Kevin, are you still there? Kevin, I hope that answered your question.
We appreciate it. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. 866-780-9100.
is our phone, 866-780-9100. Let's go next to Dean, who is in Dubuque. And, Dean, you're on the program.
Yes, I worked for a wealthy man in South Carolina as a contractor, and this man had terminal cancer, and I tried to be as compassionate with him as I could. It was difficult. So eventually the job ended, and I went to New Orleans, and I had a dream that he came to me in the dream, and he was much younger, and he had a little rat terrier, a little brown rat terrier down by his feet. And he talked to me, and when I woke up, I felt wonderful. I don't know what he said to this day. I'd probably like to get hypnotized. But I called the secretary, and she said he had died at the same time that I apparently had the dream. And I asked her if he had a little dog, would he ask his daughter? And she did. Later she asked his daughter, and I called her back. And his daughter was flabbergasted, asked me how I knew that. And so I assumed that was his way of showing me that it was true, that he had come to me in the dream.
Right. You know, there's a lot of examples in the literature of just these kind of dreams that either like a father will come to a daughter and announce that he has to go away, and the daughter will plead with him in the dream, oh, please don't go away. And then in the morning, the daughter's totally distraught, tells her friends that they had a horrible dream that was emotionally powerful about the father leaving, and then a few hours later get a phone call from the mother saying the 55-year-old father had a sudden heart attack. And so these kind of dreams are actually quite common, and that's why I think this subject matter doesn't want to go away, is because probably 2 out of 3 people could report something similar.
Do you think if I was hypnotized, I could find out what he said to me?
You know, I think it would depend on whether or not you were a good hypnotic subject. There have been studies where they've hypnotized people and asked them to recall their dreams from the night before, and a good hypnotic subject can come through with an incredible dream stories. But that's what it would all be about.
Well, I had the feeling that he told me not to worry about the rest of my life because it's all going to be good.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dean. Let's try to get in one more call before the break. Let's go to Bill in Mount Vernon. Bill, if you have a quick question, go ahead.
Well, I have a comment.
Oh, that's fine.
My first lucid dream was when I was 7 years old. I'm 62 now. And it was very graphic and very frightening. I dreamt my grandmother died, and this was about 6 in the morning, and I woke up screaming and yelling, and my parents came in. 5 minutes later, we got a phone call, and up in Spirit Lake, my grandmother had died.
Yeah, you know, that's just another example of how these kind of dreams are very powerful. And I also think that these telepathic dreams oftentimes are notice the emotional intensity and also this kind of inexplicable conviction. What does a 7-year-old know about their grandmother's condition when she lives across the state?
I'm not sure I'd even thought about death at all, you know, in terms of a relative until that very minute, and it was just, you know, the most horrible thing imaginable.
All right, Bill, thanks for the call. We need to take a break for a few minutes, and we'll have some more calls after the break here on Talk of Iowa with Robert Wagner, president of the International Association of the Study of Dreams, 866-780-9100. We have a couple of lines open. Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese with Robert Wagner, president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. Robert lives in Ames, and we're talking this hour about telepathic dreams. We've had some great calls so far, so people have experienced this. I thought it was going to be a fairly rare phenomenon, but based on some of the calls, it's maybe a little bit more common than we think, Robert.
Yes, I think it really is once you start to ask people to provide those. And oftentimes, as you can see from our callers, that many of them have to do with really powerful emotional information. And that's why I think these dreams are hard to forget, and because of the circumstance, always often hard to explain from a typical situation. But I did want to say that we should point out the distinctive characteristics that seem to set these type of dreams apart is that emotional intensity, that kind of inexplicable conviction that something's occurred, Also, sometimes people will have repetition. They'll have the same dream night after night after night until they finally pick up the phone and call the person who the dream is about and realize that they've been dreaming about something important in their life. So oftentimes, until you see that kind of novelty, a dream just might be a dream. But when you have those kind of characteristics, then you might realize you're having a telepathic dream.
Are people's pets really common in dreams? I know I keep dreaming about my neighbor's Boston Terrier. I loved him so much when I was a boy. I dreamed about him now for decades.
You know, I know people do dream about their pets on occasion. How often they do, though, boy, I'd have to check into the literature on that one.
Hmm. Anyway, we will take some more calls at this time, 866-780-9100, Lucid Dream expert Robert Wagner. Here's Michael in Des Moines. You're on the air, Michael.
Okay. Thank you. Perhaps the best thing here is the question I've got for Mr. Wagner is several years ago, 1982, 1983, somewhere like that, I heard a radio program that was 2 hours long, and it was all about George Washington's dream journals and the things in his dream journals that not only with his battles, this was when he was still, before he was president, when he was General Eisenhower, General Washington. And he had these dreams and he wrote a journal, and one of his aides managed to preserve those journals through a number of years. And I'm just wondering if Mr. Wagner has any idea where a person might be able to apprise themselves of that journal or a copy of it.
Boy, you know, that's a good question. I do think there have been reports of dreams of General Washington. You might have to contact somebody in Washington, D.C. or Mount Vernon and ask them more directly, because that's outside of my area of expertise.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Michael. Calling from West Des Moines. Let's go next to Manchester in Northeast Iowa. And Debbie's on the line. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning. I have a question about flying. Sometimes I dream that I'm flying free, and sometimes I dream that I am being tethered. What does that mean, and what's the difference between the two? And I'll take my comments off air. Thank you.
You know, flying is something that people often report, and I think they remember it more frequently because of the joy of flying, kind of that sense of flying around like a bird or being free. What it means exactly, you know, I'm not going to do any sort of dream interpretation, but if it was my dream and I was flying free, it might be representative of my joy and sense of freedom and unboundedness. And if I'm tethered, it might have to do with something going on in my life where I don't feel free, where I feel limited or somehow not as free as normal. So, but in any case, I'm not interested in doing dream telepathy, mm-hmm. or dream interpretation, sorry.
You don't do dream interpretation.
No.
Obviously, I just wanted to ask you quickly, Robert, you obviously take this very seriously because that goes without saying, but what has the study of dreams, which has, I'm sure, been a lifelong pursuit for you, what has that meant to you as a human being? How has that improved your life? Spending all this time studying dreams, what has it meant for you on a day-to-day basis? How has it improved your life?
Yeah. You know, I think keeping track of your dreams is in a way like keeping track of your psychological health. If my dreams are going along normally and there's not any real ups or downs, then I feel that psychologically my life is going along relatively well. But if I start to get into a series of dreams with anxiety or dreams with concerns, then I stop myself and look back at my life and think, you know, what's going on in my current life that I need to address or I'm not paying attention to or something like that. So I think dreams for many of us, it's a cheap form of psychotherapy and kind of monitoring ourselves. But I did want to mention that people who are interested in this specific topic of dream telepathy, there's an excellent book that has the studies, the scientific studies that were conducted on this, or many of them. And the book is called Dream Telepathy. It's by Montague Allman, who was the chief of psychiatry at Maimonides Hospital Sleep Clinic in Brooklyn, and Stanley Krippner, who's a professor currently at Saybrook. But what these folks did, Montague Allman was a psychiatrist, and he started to notice that oftentimes his patients, when they were talking about their dreams, would bring up something that was occurring in Montague Allman's life. And he found this odd. He found it quite common, but also very odd. How was it that his patient, who didn't know anything about his life, would be dreaming something that it had occurred to Allman the day before? And as he looked into it, he discovered that other psychiatrists and psychotherapists were reporting the same thing. So back in the 60s, he decided to investigate this seriously and began to get some subjects, because the reason that it occurred in the 60s, not only was there the idea of the human potential movement, but in the 50s, Kleitman and Azarinsky had discovered that rapid eye movements occurred during the dream state. So what their experimental design basically was is that they would get a person, they'd call him the telepathic receiver, they'd bring him to the sleep lab, and they'd put him in the sleep lab with all the scientific equipment on his head, so they could tell exactly when he was having rapid eye movement or when he was in the dream state. And then in a separate room, they'd have the telepathic sender, who would open up an envelope chosen from a group of hundreds of envelopes that had pictures or photos in it. And the telepathic sender would then open up the envelope, and when he was told the other person was having rapid eye movement, he would begin sending the imagery from whatever image that he was looking at there. Then the experimenter, without knowing what the image was, would go in. They'd wake up the person after their dream and ask him what they had dreamt. And they would keep doing this all night until they had four or five dreams recorded. Then basically what would happen is they would give the dreams to a group of judges, along with seven or eight pictures, one of which was the target image, but no one still knew what the target image was. And then the judges would rank the dreams in relation to these seven or eight target images, of which only one was the exact target image. And what they found after doing 13 studies is that in 9 of the 13 studies, there was statistically significant results. And this really surprised them, that sometimes the results were truly incredible. The telepathic receiver would pick up the dream imagery very, very closely and incorporate it into their dreaming. And what was interesting also about this study is that it was so highly regarded, the people doing the study were so highly regarded, that it actually got an NIH grant, a National Institute of Health grant. But as things turned out, as people tried to replicate the experiment, some had similar success. But then others did not have the same sort of success. And in the book that came out about 10 years ago called Our Dreaming Mind by Robert Van de Castle, who's formerly a professor at the University of Virginia, Charlottesville, some of the researchers who had conducted studies where it did not get the same results or the same positive results for showing dream telepathy, they stated that they created conditions that were not conducive to this occurring. They set up a laboratory experiment where the imagery was too similar, where the person who was the telepathic sender really wasn't engaged in the topic. And so it kind of turned out that this is one of these cases where the researcher of one of these experiments, at least, said that he was trying to defend science, that he couldn't believe that dream telepathy occurred. And so out of concern for science, he did everything to show that this did not occur. And so that's one of the curious things about this particular topic. Why I think it's interesting now is when it comes to lucid dreaming. In lucid dreaming, a person becomes consciously aware that they're dreaming. And this has been scientifically proven over the last 30 years by Stephen LaBerge and others in a laboratory. A person will become consciously aware, and then they can move their eyes left and right 8 times and signal that they're consciously aware in the dream state. And so this has really been a fascinating thing. But what's interesting is what I began to find is that lucid dreamers, when they were consciously aware, oftentimes would go out and seek telepathic information. Hmm. And they'd been doing this at the International Association for the Study of Dreams, Each year we have an annual conference. Our next one is going to be in late June in Asheville, North Carolina. But each year they just do a night. They call it Dream Telepathy Night, where they get a telepathic sender who picks an envelope and goes back to the room and tries to transmit the photo or image there. And what's been happening lately at the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and this isn't a scientific experiment, it's just kind of done for fun and education, is that some of the people who are lucid dreamers become consciously aware, and then they go seek out in the dream state the telepathic sender, who oftentimes will basically explain to them what the image is, and then they wake up and they write down their dreams. When they wake up in the morning, they come down to the main room, and now there's four images laid out, only one of which is the target image, and then people put their dreams behind whichever one they think they dreamt about. But the fact that these consciously aware lucid dreamers are doing this, I think, is kind of a new breakthrough and gives science an opportunity for the first time to kind of examine this more scientifically.
So that's really fascinating. This is Talk of Iowa. Robert Wagner, our lucid dream expert. Let's go get some more calls on the air. Robert, Linda is calling. Linda, where are you calling from?
Linda, Des Moines.
You're in Des Moines. Go ahead with your question.
Okay. This used to happen to me more when I was young than it does now, but I would have dreams, and they'd be very strange dreams, and I would remember them when I woke up. Well, I had one. My first one was here in Iowa. Years later, I moved to Des Moines, and it's kind of like a deja vu moment where I remembered that dream, and it was all about the place I worked and the supervisor. And it, no way I would have ever been able to, you know, have that person in my dream, because I had no idea it was moving to Florida. I had no, and I just wondered how common that was.
Right. You know, at the International Association for the Study of Dreams, there is a scientist, Art Funkhauser, from Switzerland, who studies deja vu and deja situ, or the place where it's located. And sometimes people do wonder whether these feelings of deja vu are actually when we return to the event that we had dreamt about at an earlier time. Because oftentimes many of us have these feelings of deja vu on occasion. And when we start to think about where we had that memory, the only thing we can think about is a dream that occurred. So it might have to do with dreams, which might be coincidental, but sometimes some people feel that it might be actually kind of forward-looking dreams. But thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Linda. Call us especially if you've had a telepathic dream, which is, we're focusing on that this hour. We'd love to hear from you. Telepathic dream questions, 866-780-9100. And we'll go next to Jason in Muscatine. Hello, Jason.
Howdy. Yeah, actually happened to my wife's grandfather. He was in hospice about 3 or 4 years ago around Christmas. And when you get to that certain stage, you go to sleep, you sleep longer and longer. My wife and I are visiting. He'd just gone to sleep, so we went out to finish up some Christmas shopping. And I saw a piece of software that I really wanted but couldn't run right then on my computer. I needed a really good video card. Now, this is a guy, he's a teacher, smart, but not technical at all. We get back, haven't had a chance to say a word to anyone. We're trying to be quiet because, as far as we know, he's asleep. As soon as we set foot in the room, he says to me, "Jason, don't forget you're going to have to get a video card before you can run that."
Oh, interesting. You know, I remember Mark Twain, he wrote that that when people called this an accident, he thought that an accident, it's no different than receiving a telegram would be called an accident. So in a sense, the grandfather kind of picked up what the son-in-law was doing. And when you have cases like that, it's really hard to explain how that could be an accident.
And
or a coincidence.
My wife's a pastor, and having been with her, seeing her, and hearing her talk about some other folks going through their own end-of-life times, there's a lot of that going around where folks getting towards the end of their life seem to kind of, to not sound too new agey, to become detached from the time and kind of be able to look forward or back a little bit farther than normal.
Right, right. It's interesting. There are studies that people have done about people at the end of life, and you're right. It does seem to be a particularly special time for some people in terms of what they comprehend and what they experience. But thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, Jason, thanks. We want to try to get some more calls on the air before our time runs out. Let's go next to Larry in Rock Island. Hi, Larry.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah, like I was saying, I've been to heaven before, and you tell a lot of people that ain't been there, they're like, oh, man, you crazy. It never happened. And it's real. You know, I've been telling people this since I was a little boy. And God is real, and he's a black man. He ain't the feminine faggot type man that they have dressed up in a gown and got everything on him except lipstick. He ain't like that at all.
Okay, I think we're sort of getting his point there.
Yeah, yeah.
Robert.
You know, but people oftentimes have transcendent dreams or spiritual dreams, and frequently, of course, everyone interprets them according to their own belief system.
Right. Let's go to Ray in Mason City. Hi, Ray.
Hi. 31 years ago, my father died, and the night that I called, I had to call my sister that he was going to pass away. She told me after she came up here for the funeral, she said that she expected that call all day long because the night before, she said my father was sitting on the foot of my bed. She lived in Houston, Texas.
Right.
So she didn't say she was dreaming, but I'm sure she was.
Yeah, it's interesting when you start to study these kind of reports. Oftentimes they occur at that curious stage between waking and dreaming. Sometimes neurologically they've discovered that when you awaken, some people, it takes them 2 minutes before their normal waking brain function appears. And so some people can spend 30 seconds or 45 seconds or even up to 2 minutes in kind of a curious state of kind of waking dreaming. And oftentimes at this time, they'll report apparitions. But what's curious, as Ray points out, is the sister reported having a visit from the father who at that time was passing away.
All of these dreams are so fascinating to hear people recount these. Thank you for the call from Mason City. Let's go to Waterloo. Rose is on the line with us this morning. Hi, Rose.
Hi.
You're on the air with your comment or question, please.
Yes. I'd like to know if many people have dreams about people who are close to them who have died recently, and they come back almost to reassure the person that they're okay, because that's happened to me all my life.
Yeah, you know, Rose, you might want to get a book by Dr. Patricia Garfield called The Dream Messenger, How Dreams of the Departed Bring Healing Gifts. And she's interviewed hundreds of people about their dreams of the departed. And one of the most common dreams are dreams of the departed who come back to say that everything's fine, that they're doing well, and that everything's great. And so that's a very common dream in the dream literature.
Very comforting. What was her name again?
And her name is Patricia Garfield. And the book is called The Dream Messenger.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Rose was calling from Waterloo. Let's try to get Christy on from Swisher. Christy, you're on with Robert Wagoner on Talk of Iowa.
Thank you for taking my call. My question relates to, is there a way to know whether you should act on a telepathic dream or that you've had, or do you just simply wait and see what happens?
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent question. Oftentimes the dreams that are telepathic, you can see that they have both a literal and symbolic information. So sometimes you have to tread very carefully here, and if it's a friend or something, just make a polite inquiry that you had a certain dream, and does this have any meaning for them? And after a while, you'll start to see your batting average, so to speak, or your probability of being correct, and start to learn the differences between telepathic dreams, or what appear to be telepathic dreams, and normal dreams. So take it slow and ask questions. Don't announce things. Ask questions and learn before you pursue it further.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chrissy. Let's we have a time for one more call, I think. Bill is in Dubuque. And, Bill, you're on the program.
Yeah, here's. I'll just give you the two quick questions, and I'll listen to the answer on the air because I know you're running out of time. One is, when you talk about the experiments they ran, how did the fellow transmit the information to the sleeper in the first place? I didn't get that. And the second question is, I have a lot of dreams. I'll wake up 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and they'll be very vivid. I'll go back to sleep, and I'll forget them the next morning. Is there a way I can remind myself?
Yeah, Bill. What I always recommend is that that's why you should keep a journal or a notepad by your bedside, and when you wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning with that dream, just jot down some notes, and then in the morning you can look at those notes and realize the dream more carefully. But you do have a good question. How did they transmit the imagery? So oftentimes the person who's a telepathic sender would try to either enter into that image. Like one time it was a dream of, or the image was two boxers boxing. And so the telepathic sender got up in the room and was dancing around like a boxer does and swinging in the air and just kind of imagining. So basically they use their imagination to transmit.
Robert, we're out of time. The hour goes so amazingly fast. It's so fascinating. Thank you very much. What's your website?
So I have a website about my book. It's at lucidadvice.com, and I encourage you to take a look.
Lucidadvice.com. Robert Wagner of Ames, president of the International Association of the Study of Dreams. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Talk of Iowa Today. Assistant producer is Christoph Mai. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese. To find the unknown.